Hello and welcome to Four Panel. We are the podcast about all things comic book related and, of course, manga related for the other side of the pond. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hello. That was a bit of a sexy hello from me, wasn't it?
That was a very 70s certain type of film introduction.
Let me get my wrench out. I don't know what's
got
wrong.
Got deep dish pizza for you with extra sausage.
Yes. I'm here to fix the fridge.
Surely that's counterintuitive because it's going to get hot in here.
That's why I have to fix the fridge. Right. Anyway, let's do the usual info dump at the beginning. Then we are on the Geek Show Podcast Network because you found us. So, as you're all aware, the Geek Show Podcast Network is run by volunteers. And if you like what you hear, then we do have all sorts of other shows on the network. There's shows about movies like Cinema Eclectica, and there's shows about TV like On the Box. There's even shows about animation like Keyframe. And, you know, if you like what you hear and you want to support us, we have you can make a donation using the links on our website, or you can buy one of the lovely bits of merchandise from our shop, which is also on our website. And our contact page, if you want to talk to us as well, is on our website. It's all on thegeekshow.co.uk. If you are interested in being on a show or you want to write for us, then you can get in touch with us using the contact form on our website, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, or somewhere like that, and send us a message that way. All of our shows are available on things like Mixcloud and iTunes and various other places on the internet. So, yeah. That's the blurb. That's the info dump done. So, shall we get into it?
Yep. So, I think, Rob, you have a bit of news for us to kick things off.
Oh, yeah. I'm starting off this week, aren't I?
Yeah. We didn't think this through at all.
No, we didn't. We didn't.
It's gone horribly wrong.
You wouldn't think we've done this before. No, do you know what it is? It's because we have done this before many, many times where we didn't actually plan it, so it's become a habit. The not planning has become a habit instead of the planning.
We foolishly thought we could play it by ear and everything would be fine.
Yes, because we foolishly thought so many times that we could play it by ear and everything would be fine.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what are we, the kind of people who learn from experience?
No, never. I deny that possibility. Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
Yes, let's get into this.
That's a good way to start a show.
Bryan Cranston is always a good way to start a show. And Bryan Cranston has basically come right out and said, I want to be Mr. Sinister. And thinking about it, it wouldn't take much to make him Mr. Sinister. We know he can be a sinister character. We know he can basically wander around going, I'm the nightmare. You know, so we know he can do that.
Entire film of, like, silvery red-eyed Heisenberg.
Yeah.
I would definitely be up for that.
Well, just imagine if you had the guy who was playing Gambit in the first Wolverine movie, because he looked the part. I'll be honest, he did look the part.
He did. He was fine up until he opened his mouth.
Yeah, but you could do that whole storyline bit where Gambit gets trapped in the past and Mr. Sinister has to tinker with Gambit and make him more powerful, so that all of a sudden Gambit's abilities work on organic objects as well, which I never understood. Right?
He has to tinker with him.
Well, aside from the tinkering, I never understood why Gambit's powers only worked on inorganic objects and not organic ones, right? Because it doesn't make sense. His powers affect things at the molecular level, yeah?
Yeah, it's kind of an arbitrary distinction, isn't it?
Yeah, and the reason why they basically made that distinction was because they don't want Gambit to be a killer, they want him to be a handsome, dashing fellow, you know? They want Rogue to fall in love with him and not explode at the first touch.
Plus, I guess his whole gimmick is the throwing cards that explode, and if you can just blow people up anyway, that's kind of redundant.
Again, I never understood the throwing cards, right? The whole playing card bit, because I've tried throwing cards like that and they don't travel very well.
Do they also not explode on impact?
Well, no, it's obvious they're not going to do that unless, you know, your Gambit, or you attach a grenade to them. But if you attach a grenade
I think I've found out your problem of why it doesn't seem to fly very far then.
Well, because it's got a grenade attached to it. No, but this is the thing, you know, if you just take a normal playing card, and you know that whole thing where you try and get it into the hat?
Yeah.
Right? Tried that so many times, because I liked Gambit and I liked the whole idea of throwing playing cards. Practiced for ages, still couldn't get the bloody card into the hat. And they were always curving. There was curving, and Gambit's cards always went straight. But yeah, the cards, I could never get them to go straight into the hat. It never travelled in a straight line. So the comic books lied to me, man. They lied to me.
Yep, that's entirely it. Certainly nothing to do with your technique, I'm sure.
Well, that could have had something to do with it, admittedly. But anyway, Mr. Sinister. Back to Mr. Sinister. I really think it's a great idea to let Bryan Cranston play Mr. Sinister.
And I think, generally, it's a great idea to let Bryan Cranston play anyone, but especially this time.
I wouldn't go so far as to say anyone.
How dare you. Bryan Cranston would be the best Wonder Woman we'd ever seen.
I wasn't talking about that.
The only person a better Wonder Woman than Bryan Cranston is Idris Elba.
I wasn't going down that route. I was thinking more Bryan Cranston in his Oscar-winning role as Matilda.
Yeah, I see no problem with that. Although, no, wait, no. I do see one problem with that.
What?
Why would you cast Bryan Cranston as Matilda when you could cast Idris Elba as Matilda?
So, yeah. Well, that's why I said Bryan Cranston's Oscar-winning performance.
God, you know what? You could probably save so much money on films by just hiring those two to play every single character in your film.
Oh, God, no, because then it'll be like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America, where he played half the cast. And you had a random robbery scene, including Samuel L. Jackson.
It was a strange film.
Yes, but funny. But yes, I hope that they take it seriously and they think about having Bryan Cranston playing Mr. Sinister, because if he's volunteering himself, then that means he's obviously looked into the character.
Yeah, clearly must have.
Mm. So, yeah. Moving on, then, there
well,
was...
No, because he might have some stiff competition.
Oh?
There's also a little thing I found. Olivia Colman also wants to play a Marvel bad guy.
And which one's Olivia Colman?
She is basically the lady from every single British TV show ever.
Was she in Doctor Who?
Yes, I think she was in an episode of Doctor Who. Well, the thing most people know her from now, I think, is Broadchurch...
Oh, she's the one who. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of Doctor Who, because David
yes,
Tennant's
she
in that.
Team up with Doctor Who.
Yeah, David Tennant's in there, and for a lot of people, David Tennant is still the Doctor.
Oh my God! Oh no!
What?
I called him Doctor Who, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, that's it.
Why?
I'm going to have to retire.
Why?
Like, I think I have to hand in the geek badge.
Why?
Because that is one of like the cardinal errors.
What? Not being up to date with your doctors.
And kind of. Tear off my badge and my gun, walk out as the sad piano music plays.
Well, no, because the sad piano music in your case would be the piano music at the end of the Hulk TV series. You know, that sad walking away music.
Yes, as I try and hitch a ride.
Yeah, and that would automatically give you your geek badge back, because only a geek would get that reference.
Yeah, turned it around.
Yeah, also, not knowing... who the current Doctor Who is, or referring to a former actor who played Doctor Who as the Doctor, isn't a reason to hand in your geek badge or your geek card, right?
Then, oh, no, I mean, because I called him Doctor Who instead of the Doctor.
Yeah.
See, it was worse than you thought, Rob.
Well, no, I deny that. As a geek emperor, I am actually overruling that decision. I'm putting my foot down and saying, no, just because...
Well, no. In this note, you are, like, the geek chief of police.
Yes.
That's building a scene here, Rob. You can't ruin it with your bringing in emperors.
Well, okay, I am the geek chief of police. Oh, sorry, the geek judge. Let's stick with the legal theme, yeah? I'm the geek judge. I'm overruling that. And, you know, I'm fighting in favour of you because... at the end of the day, the only people who really care, geeks or otherwise, the only people who really care if you refer to the Doctor as the Doctor or as Doctor Who, the only people who actually care about that are diehard fans of Doctor Who, the TV series. General geeks don't actually care.
And it's great because now I'm reinstated, but I'm reinstated as the renegade geek who doesn't play by the rules, but goddammit, he gets the job done.
Yes, there you go.
Where have I gone with this, Rob?
We're down to the last bit where I now play the geek chief of police. I have to go, "Young!"
And scene.
And call you into my office. And there we have a scene. We have a new TV series, Geek Police. So
anyway, Olivia Colman can be in that then.
Yes. She can be Geek Police with us. She can be the bad guy. Or the bad woman, not the bad guy. But hang on. If she's going for the same role as Bryan Cranston, then does that mean she'd be Mrs. Sinister? And I'm not saying she is going to go for the role of Sinister, but would she be Mrs. Sinister or Ms. Sinister or something like that?
See, I think there is actually like a Ms. Sinister.
Is there?
Yeah, because Mrs. Sinister, I think at some point he made like a bunch of clones. And then one of the times when he died, he came back in like a lady's body.
Seriously? They let Mr. Sinister have a lady's body?
Yes, they did.
Did he change his name to Mr. Creepy afterwards?
No, but he probably should have.
Yes. Oh, I don't know. I don't like it when they do the whole gender swap on, you know, characters, because you just know that when they do that, the male characters are obviously going to find the nearest private place, and the female characters, likewise.
And that's how the superheroes win. They just hold up a mirror.
Yes. Now, if the supervillains wanted to win, all they'd have to do is invent a gender swap gun, right, and fire it at the superheroes. And can you imagine Big Green Johnny Bravo, that is Amadeus Cho, right? If he suddenly was, you know, female Amadeus Cho.
That's a lot of confusing emotions you're bringing up, Rob.
Yes, I know. But he wouldn't be out fighting monsters. He'd find the nearest quiet place to examine.
Well, for sure, you'd find, like, first of all, you need to find, like, the nearest extra large bra shop.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But then again, you're making him sound like he's like a Holstein cow.
Not like a what?
A Holstein cow. They're the ones who are... That's that cow with, like, the really large udder that's supposed to give, like, really creamy milk type thing. I think they're on the continent somewhere, like Austria, Germany, somewhere like that. You don't know them?
So Amadeus Cho gives really creamy milk, is the point we're making.
No, that's not the point we're making. You were talking about he's going to have to find a really large bra. And I said, you make him sound like a Holstein cow. I'm confused. Where are we going with this? Let's go back.
Yeah, please can we go back?
Yes, let's go back. Anyway.
I'm scared. I'm so scared, Rob.
So, yeah, maybe by making a gender swap gun, supervillains could finally win. You never know. It could happen.
Yeah. And it would, like, immediately fix comic books' diversity problems.
Yes, it would. And not in the Bombshells way, thankfully.
In a new, horrifically confusing way.
Well, it wouldn't be new and horrifically confusing, because basically it would be exactly the same, only with more female characters. Because all the female characters would basically be the male characters with boobs.
Yeah, but I mean, just the initial moment when every single superhero looks down and just goes, "What?
Where's my junk?
What are these?"
No. Where's my junk? And I think we have an episode title. So, yeah, and they would go, "What are these?" You remember that episode of Farscape where Crichton and Erin's son swap bodies?
Yeah, like all the male superheroes would be exactly like that.
Yes, because there's that one scene where Crichton rips open the top and then starts jiggling. Yeah.
No, so do you think this is going to backfire horribly on the villains?
Yes, I think it would. I think it would backfire, because the villains would see all the superheroes just having fun. You know, "I want a piece of that. I want it. Oh, why? Why did they get all the fun? Just here we are trying to take over the world."
Stuck sobbing in a corner because Spider-Man is too sexy now.
Yes. Oh, can you imagine? You know that dancing scene in Spider-Man 3?
Which, to be fair, in that scene, Tobey Maguire was a very pretty looking girl.
Yes, and if they were playing Right Said Fred with "I'm Too Sexy."
Oh, Infinity War's going to be weird.
Yes, it is. Anyway, moving on from them to something a little bit odd, which I think we've mentioned before, but I want to bring it up again because there's something that's disturbing me about it. It's Champions.
Yes, Marvel's newest series thing. What is happening?
which I think is supposed to be a little bit like Young Justice or Teen Titans. I think it's supposed to be their version of
it. Yeah, it's a very similar bunch of young heroes designed to strike it out on their own.
Yeah, because you got Nova and Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel, Cyclops, Viv Vision, and Totally Awesome Hulk. And Viv Vision being something to do with the Vision, I suppose.
Yeah, he is one of the... A couple of weeks ago, I talked about the Vision series.
Yeah.
And how he kind of made himself an android family.
Oh, is she the daughter, is she?
Yeah, she is the daughter.
Ah, right, I see. Okay. I've just found the cover of the...
Virginia, Viv, and Vin.
Yeah. I just found the cover of the Vision one. That's hilarious. They've got the 1950s Happy Family cover.
Yeah.
And they're all just smiling and waving. Oh, that's genius. So I think I'm going to have to read this. But yeah. What?
But yeah, champions.
No, sorry. I've just gone to Viv Vision and Googled some images. One of them is of Vision holding up an American football, saying, "What is this?" And it says, "Fighting Redskins." On the football.
Yes.
And the title of that story is Balls in the Air.
Yeah. Vision is great. You need to read it.
I think I am going to have to. The reason I bring up Champions is because they've released the cover is on various things, right? For issue one. And it says Champions. And it's got the six of them walking down what looks to be a subway station type thing. Right, platform, subway station platform.
Yeah, something like that.
Walking down a subway station platform, and above the word champions, it's got the tagline, "Because the world still needs heroes," and that's the bit that's getting my goat a little bit, right? Because that's the line that they used for Thunderstrike, the ill-fated superhero back during the original Infinity Gauntlet run in the 90s, Eric Masterson was the guy who was playing the role of Thor, and he was a normal human who had Thor trapped somewhere inside him. Thor was basically imprisoned by Odin, very big, kind of very...
Wait. Say that Eric Masterson gets his powers because he's a man inside a man.
Yeah, basically.
I never thought I was going to get to use that line ever again.
But now you have. Right.
No, I have. I'm obscenely happy about it.
But basically, when Thor is finally freed by Eric Masterson, Odin, as thanks for Eric teaching Thor certain lessons, right? As thanks for that, and because he didn't give up during the Infinity Gauntlet and he fought on and everything like that, even though he died originally after Thanos turned him to glass and shattered him, Odin said, "Okay, you've got the heart of a warrior. I'm going to give you something special." Gives him a mace, and it's not as powerful as Mjolnir, but the mace is called Thunderstrike, and he changes his superhero name from Thor to Thunderstrike. He's kind of the biker version of Thor, which was one of things.
The 90s biker version of Thor.
Yeah, the 90s biker. Yeah, you remember that TV series Renegade?
Not at all.
It was about some guy on a Harley going around, and he'd been falsely accused of a crime, and he has to try and clear his name, and he goes from place to place helping people. It's kind of that and Thor combined. So anyway, he was one of the Avengers, made with the Avengers again. He had an outfit similar to Thor, and, similar to Thor's, but with biker elements as well. Went up against some guy called Blood Axe, who was a guy who was hard done by, who just happened to find a mystical axe that caused him to go around.
As you do.
Caused him to go around killing bad guys. So him and Blood Axe face off against each other. Blood Axe apparently is more powerful than the Avengers, who had Circe as one of their number at that point. And then it came to this... Yeah, it came to this thing where, they'd beaten Blood Axe, but they can't get rid of the axe. They have to destroy the axe in order to save everybody, and Eric is the only one who can destroy the axe, and the only way he can destroy the axe is to basically bring his weapon, his mace and the axe together, and then that explosion kills him, blah, blah, blah. And then when Thor comes down to visit his grave, writes on his grave, "Because the world still needs heroes."
And also, what a moron, he could have just thrown it to the moon or something.
Could have thrown it into the sun, yes. Or he could have called Thor or Odin and said, look, it's too dangerous to be left lying around here. Can you guys do something about this?
I mean, to be fair, this is a man who wears a sleeveless leather jacket, knee pads, and a ponytail.
Yes,
the ponytail. He does not have the best decision-making powers.
Yeah, but during the last fight, he was assisted ably by people who did have the ability to think tactically, like Captain America.
Exactly. Captain America is such a tactical thinker. He was letting he knew the state that comics were in the 90s, and so he knew we have to get rid of all the Thunderstrikes and the Circeuses and the Stingrays and get like the real Thor and Iron Man back on the team.
Well, no, he only knew that after they did Capwolf.
I think that Capwolf was his breaking point.
Yes, Capwolf was the straw that broke the camel's back. Oh, no, it wasn't Capwolf, because he was fine with Capwolf. It was when they decided to do random vampire US agent.
Yes, soon as he burst through the wall, Cap, in his hairy hobo man state, thought, this needs to stop.
Yes, the thought process in his head would have literally gone, oh, crap, we're heading down the Toxic Avenger route.
And so he decided to make the Avengers great again.
Yes. So, if you're wondering who saved the Avengers, it was Captain America, secretly from the shadows, being helped by Bucky and possibly the Punisher as well. Because the Punisher never got a good deal during the 90s at all.
No, he did not.
They blacked him up.
Then they killed him and gave him, like, angel powers.
Yes. So, anyway, that's my gripe with Champions, is that they used the line from Thunderstrike and it just brings back... See, I wasn't as angry about Thunderstrike as a lot of comic book fans normally are. Normally, the reaction is, I hate Thunderstrike. It was a really bad idea. I actually like the concept of it. I just don't think the execution was any good. I like the idea of having somebody who is like a Thor running around. And we see that now. And we see it done well.
I was going to say, that's basically Jane Foster Thor.
Yeah. We see it now. We see it working really well. It's just back in the 90s, they didn't think about it. They just threw everything together in the pot and thought, oh, yeah, it's going to make a tasty dish. But no, it didn't.
It made a horrible 90s dish.
Yes. Horrible 90s TV dinner. That's what it was. One of those ones that you put in the microwave and is tasteless and lifeless and soulless.
And then you pick a long strand of blonde hair out of it.
Yes. That's what 90s Thunderstrike was like. See, I reckon if they wanted to bring back the Eric Masterson character and they brought the character back now, it would actually be quite an interesting character to bring back. Somebody like Thor, who has similar abilities to Thor, maybe not as powerful, but isn't Odin's son and isn't Jane Foster.
Well, apparently, looking at this, Kevin Masterson, I think, was his son, maybe?
Yeah.
I think he's Thunderstrike now.
Is he?
Yeah, apparently so.
Oh, right. Okay, that'd be good then.
We're wearing, like, a possibly even worse outfit than the original Thunderstrike.
Tell me.
Like, he's got the long flowing blonde hair, and then goggles, and then a bandana across his mouth, and a t-shirt with, like, a T on it, and big gloves, and the same stupid knee boots that Eric Masterson had.
Oh God, I've just found a picture of him. Oh God, I have just found a picture of him.
That's not a good look.
No, at least Eric Masterson's look, yeah, had the excuse of being in the 90s.
Yeah, this I think was actually relatively recently, like 2008-ish maybe.
That's not good.
Well, it was in Avengers Academy, which says it was 2011, so...
Yeah.
Oh, God, Marvel. Stop looking at this now because it makes me sad.
No, you want to be sad? Do this. Type in Thunderstrike and then go to Google Images. One of them I remember now, this cover. It was...
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Are you looking at the one with the Mohawk in the shape of a lightning bolt?
What? What?
You found it now.
I have not found it. God, where is this? I need to... Like, how far did you scroll down for this?
It was the second row from the top.
Second row from the top?
Yeah, Thunderstrike. Just go to Google.
Oh, no. Oh. Oh, dear me, no.
You found it now.
Don't make fun of the do-rom. No, Thunderstrike will make fun of the do.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm starting to think Thunderstrike was actually as powerful as Thor.
Yeah.
It's just that 90% of his strength had to go into like maintaining that lightning bolt hairdo.
Yeah.
Because that is physics defying.
Yeah. The World Still Needs Heroes, yeah, is on the back of written on the mace as well.
Yes. The world still needs heroes.
Yes.
Just not heroes like Thunderstrike.
Yeah. So, what can I say?
I'm done.
I don't know what to say about it. It's just hilarious.
I can't even make words, Rob.
You can't even make words.
I actually can't even for once.
Well, okay. Let's leave it at that, shall we?
Lightning Mohawk. That he's got like the thunderbolt glowing tattoos on his face.
And saying, don't make fun of the dude.
So like, he knows how bad it is, and yet he insists on keeping it.
Yeah, but you haven't seen the worst part yet of that. Look at the shoulders.
Those spiky lightning shoulder pads.
Yes.
But...
I don't know if he fires lightning bolts out of his butt.
He must do. He has to.
So, now you know the true horror of Thunderstrike. Thunderstrike is definitely one of those Vietnam moments for comic books, you know. The people who read Thunderstrike can literally turn around and say, you don't know, man. You weren't there. You weren't there. But I was.
God, I'm glad I wasn't.
I was, though. And that's why I can say, in all honesty, as a concept, Eric Masterson, the idea of Thunderstrike was great. Just execution was so, so wrong. And on that note, I think we should take a break while you recover.
I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah. So, we'll be back in a minute with some comics.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello, this is Ryan from The Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on The Geek Show Podcast Network.
This is Lizzie Boyle and Connor Boyle of Disconnected Press, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Welcome back, everyone, and we're going to get into some comics now. So we're going to start off with Andrew. And Andrew, what are you starting us off with?
Yes. Well, this week I've been doing a bit of reading of DC Rebirth, like Ooh. You did a while ago.
Well, I've been doing some Rebirth as well. That sounds wrong. I've been reading some Rebirth as well. That sounds still wrong. Carry on.
Anyway, Batman. Batman will save us from this horrible conversation.
Yes.
So yeah, I've been reading the new Batman series, which, interesting enough, because we talked about The Vision earlier, this is written by Tom King, who is the guy who does The Vision as well.
Really? Ooh.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's taken a very similar style of kind of crafting this really interesting world around a character who's actually kind of a bit boring.
Yeah.
Vision and Batman, you wouldn't want them at a dinner party.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, why? I don't know what human emotions are. Why? I wish I didn't know what human emotions were. Then I wouldn't feel so sad that my parents are dead.
Basically.
And all because you asked one of them to pass you the butter.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this is the Batman series written by Tom King with art by David Finch. And it's pretty damn interesting.
Does this pick up from where the one that I read left off?
No, I think, because there's quite, like, there's like three different Batman series at the moment. I think this is more of like a self-contained thing.
Ah, okay.
So this one starts, you see, a plane gets shot down over Gotham City.
Okay.
And Batman has to kind of rush up there and try and stop it. And you get this, I mean, it kicks off like this first issue with a really interesting emotional moment. Because basically Batman, he's on the plane, he's trying to like steer it down, and kind of all the rest of the Justice League, they're busy fighting their own things. And the only way for Batman to save the plane is to kind of guide it down from on top of the plane into the water, but the impact is going to kill him. And you kind of get this moment of him asking Alfred if his parents would think this is a good death.
Okay.
So you've got this moment, he's about to die, only for suddenly someone to stop the plane at the last second by catching it. And obviously his first thought is going, oh, Clark's arrived. but it isn't Superman.
Oh, who is it?
Two new heroes called Gotham and Gotham Girl, with the idea being they're these very classic Superman-esque, quite cheesy traditional superheroes.
Okay.
Who have come to try and... It's sort of like the whole these are the heroes Gotham deserves type moment.
Ah.
But things, like, as the series progresses, things take an interesting twist, because obviously you've got Batman deciding, you know, can he trust them? Can he try and train them? And you get this amazing moment with Alfred, where basically Batman says, I don't trust anyone, not even Alfred.
Yeah.
And, like, Alfred is standing there talking to this guy called Duke Thomas, I think, who's going to be, like, the next Robin, maybe.
Yeah.
But he turns to Duke and says, he's been like, on his 10th birthday, he asked for a katana. I thought a wakizashi was more appropriate for someone his age. Like being like the kind of Japanese short sword.
Yeah.
He's been like this ever since. So eventually he decides he's going to help Gotham and Gotham Girl kind of train to be like proper heroes, because at the moment they're a bit sloppy and untrained.
Yeah.
But actually, as he's doing that, one of my favourite named DC villains appears, Psycho Pirate.
I remember Psycho Pirate.
Yeah, so he has the ability to control emotions.
Yeah.
And he basically kind of makes Gotham go insane. And like basically Gotham decides that the city of Gotham itself can't be saved. It needs to be like just raised to the ground and started again.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really, because it's like tying into, I think especially Grant Morrison's touched on this a few times, the idea that Gotham itself is like a living entity.
Yeah.
And it draws all the people like the Joker and the Scarecrow and Mr. Freeze, all like the proper mental psychopaths.
Yeah.
And it draws them into Gotham.
Yeah.
And that's why someone like Superman can't be the hero of Gotham.
You need somebody who's part of the system already.
Exactly. You need someone who can embrace that darkness.
Yeah. It was something, it's interesting because something that was hinted at in, you know, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, that's what I mean is, it's that idea that there's like some kind of ancient evil tied to the city of Gotham.
Wouldn't it be amazing if it was Cthulhu?
Yes. That is how like you tie the mythos together.
Yes.
So anyway, Batman fights Gotham and you get a really cool fight scene. Because you see, Batman's like on the other side of Gotham.
Yeah.
The city, not the person.
Yeah.
God, this is going to be a problem with talking about it. So basically he needs someone to distract the superhero, now villain, Gotham, so he can get there. So Alfred has to suit up as Batman.
Okay.
And you get this another amazing Alfred moment of just him driving the Batmobile going, no, Master Thomas, I'll certainly look after Bruce if anything happens to you, but I'm sure it won't. I mean, it's not like you're going to walk down a dark alley with Martha in her best pearls and both get murdered. But anyway, even if I did, Master Bruce will be a delight to look after. I envision lots of quiet, lovely days sitting at home reading books together. And, like, he just drives the Batmobile at Gotham.
Wow.
So yeah, then he basically just has to stand in front of Gotham and say, stop right there, until Batman arrives to then fly the Batplane into Gotham.
Wow.
But that still doesn't stop him, because this guy is basically Superman. And so eventually his sidekick, Gotham Girl, is forced to like, come in and kill him.
Okay.
And then you realise this whole thing is like actually her origin story.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it was a really interesting way to handle it.
Cool.
Plus you learn the interesting bit that she's actually kind of like Jane Foster Thor a bit.
Yeah.
In that their powers are variable.
Oh.
Basically the idea is they can have as much strength and speed as they want.
Yeah.
But the more power they give themselves, the more of their life it takes away.
I see. Yeah.
So basically, that's kind of what happens to Gotham. Because at some one point, the entire Justice League shows up. So he makes himself strong enough to beat all of them. And then he has to fight Gotham Girl as well, who's like almost as strong as he is.
Yeah.
And he ends up basically burning himself out.
Ooh, nasty.
Hmm.
Hmm.
So yeah, Batman. It's very interesting. It's like, I think it's good that it doesn't focus on Batman himself that much.
Yeah.
I think there's only so much you can do with Batman. And it's like it builds up this interesting mythology about kind of the nature of Gotham, a lot of can you save a city like this?
Yeah.
Hmm. It's just all that a very interesting read. A lot like Vision.
Fantastic. Hmm. How am I going to top that? I think I'm going to have to go full on big guns. Wonder Woman. Get it?
Yeah, I get it, because she's got the stuffs.
Nah, I kid. Nah, I have been reading Wonder Woman Rebirth, and it's been interesting because it's kind of Wonder Woman as she is now, but also going over her origins a little bit as well, revisiting those. So how she met Steve Trevor on Themyscira, and you know, when the first time she went to the United States with him and the bodies of his soldiers and everything like that, right? And so that's a part of it. But the other part of it is basically there is a secret. There's something going on. There's a conspiracy that involves Wonder Woman, and she doesn't know what's going on, but somehow they're trying to use Steve Trevor to lead her around, because Steve and Diana have some kind of connection, some kind of preordained connection, some kind of connection through fate or destiny, whatever it is. And so these secretive enemies are trying to use that connection to lead her around by the nose, which is why in, you know, that DC Rebirth Wonder Woman comic I read.
Yeah, when she like realizes she's been lied to.
Yeah. See, the thing is, one of the things she remembers is that when she left Themyscira, she was told by her mother she could never return, right? She would be their representative in the world and she could never return, but Wonder Woman has been back several times, hasn't she?
Yeah, she has.
And now the question she has is, were they lies or not? She's trying to find Themyscira because she doesn't know where it is. And the truth is, maybe those times when she went back were all lies.
That is an interesting concept.
Yeah. And so she goes to Africa to find a friend of hers, right? An old friend who she has kind of neglected in her own, you know, in her own struggles. That friend is Barbara Ann Miniver.
Oh, Cheetah.
Yeah. Only problem is Cheetah has fallen victim to an ancient African god. And now Cheetah
again,
is...
as you do.
Yeah, and now Cheetah is far more animal than human. And the only way she can actually live is if Diana helps her kill this god. But Diana might not even be a god herself because she doesn't understand. But Barbara Ann Miniver, she is, you know, she's losing the human part of her and becoming more and more like an animal. There's a bit where she starts, they get attacked by these dog-headed guys, these werewolf-type guys, and she literally tears into one of them and starts eating his flesh.
This is sounding pretty cool.
It's pretty dark, and the story jumps around a bit in the first six issues. It goes on to, you know, when Diana's explaining to Barbara what's going on, you know, when Diana's... explaining things to Barbara about why she can't find her way home. You know, she says to her, you know, Themyscira isn't simply a place one can fly to. To reach it, our patron gods must permit access. And Barbara says, yet you've returned how many times? And Diana says, and now I cannot, and I do not know why. Have the patrons forsaken me? Because they don't refer to them as gods, they refer to them as patrons, which I like. You know, if so, why? I do not know what has changed. And other things that seem wrong in my memory. I have been deceived, Anne. I do not know by whom, I do not know why, but the deception grows, and I am afraid of what it may mean.
This, I'm liking the sound of this a lot.
And this is what I mean. The god that Cheetah and Wonder Woman need to kill is called Urskartaga. And Urskartaga has a henchman who is a warlord, an African warlord, and that African warlord has captured Steve Trevor and his soldiers and has given Steve Trevor the totem markings which will transfer the god spirit into him. And Diana's just turned up like a good little meal on a plate.
Bro.
What was that?
As Scooby-Doo would say.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the current state of play, but there is a byplay. As I said, it does talk about... it does talk about the history of Wonder Woman, how she met Steve Trevor and stuff like that. One of the bits that they have, an interesting bit, is when she gets to America and they're picked up by the police and Steve is talking to his army fellows, but Diana is in a cell in a police station for all this time, sitting by herself, and she doesn't know what's going on. Nobody understands her language. She's trying to communicate. She's being happy and nice to people, but she doesn't understand what's going on, and she's thinking that maybe it was a mistake to come out into the world of men with Steve. And then Steve turns up with Barbara Ann Miniver, which is when Diana first met Barbara Ann Miniver, and because she was like a linguist or something like that, and she could speak a little bit of Diana's powers. And Diana suddenly says to her, "Last night I was visited by the patrons. They came to me and they were all in animal form and they gave her gifts, right? And one of the gifts that they gave her was super strength." So the idea in this version of Wonder Woman is that when she was in Themyscira, she wasn't a superhero. She didn't have superpowers. She was just a normal human. An Amazon.
So she's kind of like Captain Marvel then now.
Yeah, which is quite an interesting angle, I think.
I like that. It's interesting.
Yeah, it adds a nice twist to it as well, because if her powers are based on the gods giving her abilities, then the gods can take those abilities away.
Yeah, I think it also probably gives her a much-needed boost, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I thought the fact that the gods didn't actually appear as gods, they just appeared as animals in her cell. That was quite an interesting one as well. And I've got to say, I prefer Wonder Woman, this version of Wonder Woman, to the version of Wonder Woman in Bombshells.
Well, yeah, because I think we've been none too subtle in our dislike of Bombshells.
Yeah, I know that there's a certain group of people who think Bombshells is, you know, it's very pro female character. It's very much pushing the agenda of female characters, and you know, bringing them to the fore, and it's very progressive and everything like that. And I disagree. I think Bombshells is regressive in the extreme, because it's saying that it's not going for equality. It's going for female domination rather than male domination. And as I keep saying, nothing encapsulates that better than Steve Trevor losing his shit in the middle of a battlefield and having Diana sing him a lullaby to calm him down.
Yeah, that's not fixing the problem. It's just flipping it around.
Yeah, it is just reversing the roles. Yeah, if you want something that's more equal, we'll get to that later on in the show.
You know what it is?
Yeah?
It's like having a dirty carpet. Instead of hoovering it, you just kind of dig it up and flip it around.
Yeah, basically. You know, I don't know what the male version of misogyny is.
Woman-sogyny?
I don't know.
Girl-sogyny.
Hey?
That'll do.
Bloke-sogyny.
Girl-sogyny.
Is it bloke-sogyny? Fella-sogyny? No, that sounds wrong.
That just sounds like a bad night out.
Yes. Anyway, back to you.
Yes, so keeping with the DC theme, I have been reading New Superman.
Oh, hang on. Is this the new Superman as in Clark Kent, or the new Superman as in the Chinese one?
Yes, the Chinese one.
Oh, you've been reading that one?
I have.
Oh, right. Okay, tell me. I'll be looking at this.
So it follows... Well, we kind of open on a fat, chubby kid running away from a bully, with the narrator explaining kind of he's always wanted to be a superhero, stuff like that. Only then twist, our narrator isn't the fat, chubby kid, it's the bully.
Really?
Yep.
That's an interesting angle.
Yeah, it is. So this is Kong Keenan is his name.
Is there a Kel in there?
I knew it was coming. But yeah, so he is a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
He kind of picks on this rich kid, kind of steals his soda and his lunch, right up until the Blue Condor appears, who is China's first ever supervillain.
Okay.
And that's when we learn that there's more to Kong than meets the eye.
Or is he a Transformer?
No. So Blue Condor, he tries to kidnap the fat kid because he's the son of, like, the manager of South Asian Airlines. But as he's trying to do that, Kong just kind of picks up the soda can, it's just lamps Blue Condor on the face with it and runs away.
Okay.
And so while he's doing that, we see kind of a mysterious figure sees this on a TV screen, because he later gets interviewed by a reporter. So she watches that and goes, yes, he's the one.
Really?
Then, yeah, then we find out a bit more about Kong. Basically, the reason he picks on that fat kid, he knows it's like it's a really bad thing to do. But like I said, that kid is the son of the manager of South Asian Airlines, which is the aircraft his mother was on when it crashed.
Ah, I see.
But like, so he's just kind of trying to work out some of that anger, which isn't helped by the fact that his father is obsessed with a secret government organization he calls the Ministry of Self-Reliance. And instead of talking to his son about anything, spends all his time trying to prove their existence. Like Kong, basically, he's a bit disappointed because his dad just doesn't even care about the fact that his son is a hero now.
Mm. Okay.
So he goes to his mother's grave, where he is approached by Dr. Omen, who, dun-dun-dun, works for the Ministry of Self-Reliance.
I didn't see that coming at all.
I think someone's being sarcastic.
I think someone is correct.
So yeah, he gets taken in by the Ministry, and basically is explained that China's becoming one of the world's leading forces, and to appeal more to the West, they want to create their own Western-style superheroes, and they've picked Kong to be the Superman of China.
Wow.
Yeah, so they put him in a woogly-woogly science device that gives him Superman powers, but initially only for a bit. Because like Superman, he needs to get charged up by the sun. So he's only got like he's basically like one of those new batteries that only has a little bit of charge in it before you put it on a charger.
So does that mean he has to go out and buy extra battery packs and plug them in somewhere? I'm not even going to suggest where.
Not quite. But yeah, because eventually, obviously, him being an impulsive 16-year-old with the powers of Superman, things do not go well at first, with him basically like almost blowing up the entire lab with super laser vision.
Is he a bit like Amadeus Cho when he first becomes Hulk?
Yeah, he is a bit like that. He means well, but he's just not in control of his powers at all.
Okay.
So who gets called in to stop him? But the Batman and Wonder Woman of China.
Oh?
So yeah, they kind of, because these are like the two previous test subjects.
Yeah.
And they calm down. So it all kicks off from there. So yeah, Batman of China is great. He's like, he's this mildly overweight guy who is clearly such a huge Batman fan. Because there's one bit where they're talking about their first like official mission as a team is to rescue some woman who'd been kidnapped by a supervillain called Sunbeam.
Okay.
And like, Batman lists off all these facts. And Dr. Omen says, well done, Batman, you've done your homework. He says, of course, Batman always does his homework. It's because he's such a tryhard.
I'm not even going to say anything.
The team, they go to stop Sunbeam, who is another Chinese supervillain. B, which stands for Bat Utility Vehicle.
Sorry, what was that?
But the BUV, the Bat Utility Vehicle.
The BUV?
Yes. Okay. It's basically like, you know, one of those big BMWs with a couple of Batwings stuck on the side. So they go in, they fight Sunbeam, and you see, Batman and Wonder Woman aren't doing too well, and, you know, kind of Superman isn't allowed in the fight because like his powers have gone, but he still kind of rushes in, kind of tackles Sunbeam and save them, and in the process kind of gets shot in the face with her energy weapon, which obviously, her name being Sunbeam, it's kind of like a solar ray thing, and that's how Superman gets his powers back.
Okay.
Then, you see, things kind of start to develop, that slowly Superman, Batman and Wonder Woman, they kind of get a bit of respect for each other and start to become friends. All the while, there's kind of this sense that something's a bit not right. They're starting to respect each other and slowly starting to realise that the Ministry of Self-Reliance might not be entirely on the level.
Okay.
Like, they've got their own sort of underwater supervillain prison, which doesn't seem overly concerned with supervillain rights.
Yeah.
And one of the prisoners might even be the first test subject for China experiment.
For what?
So basically the experiment that turned Kong into the Superman of China was implied he wasn't the first test subject.
Ah.
And that the original, kind of the underwater prison.
Okay. Interesting. Hmm. There's only 3 issues of this out so far.
Yeah,
there's
only 3 issues.
I think we're going to Sorry.
It's fairly entertaining. Well, since it just started, it's kind of
still kind of
got
finding its feet, you'd say.
To go in an interesting direction.
Yeah, so still kind of finding its feet, you'd say.
Yeah, I would say. Not in like a bad way, just in a it's taking its time to establish its status quo.
Yeah, but I like it when they do that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's already thrown in some interesting curveballs. Like, issue 2 actually ends with Kong revealing his identity to all of China.
Wow.
And I love it that he does it because he's such a kid, because he's got a crush on the reporter who's interviewing him.
Yeah.
So obviously he wants to immediately be, it's me, it's Kong Keenan, I'm the Superman of China.
Yeah.
Like, you know, basically, it's not just her, but he wants his dad to finally notice him as well.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like he's suddenly, he's a very interesting character. He starts off being not at all likable. And over the first 3 issues, you learn that actually he's got quite a lot of hidden depths to him.
He is a lot like Amadeus Cho then.
Yeah, he is a lot like Amadeus Cho. And I like that kind of character. Especially when it's someone like Superman.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice inversion of the whole, you know, whiter than white, I'm the best guy on the planet, Superman.
See, the interesting thing about the Superman character, though, I watched another Max Landis video called Regarding Clark, right? And he made a very, very valid point about Superman. He basically said, okay, what you have is a character who actually is pretty unique when you come to the whole idea of comic book superheroes. You know, his parents weren't killed. He's not the victim of he wasn't injected with the super soldier formula or any other weird, you know, nonsense like that. He doesn't have magical powers. He doesn't do any of that. You know, he hasn't suffered any major traumas. He hasn't been the victim of bullying. He hasn't, you know, none of that applies to him. He's just a guy who was raised on a farm in Kansas who happens to be the most powerful superhero on the planet, which puts him into a very, very odd situation because he is the most powerful guy on the planet, but he was raised by 2 really good parents, you know? He had that really good childhood that a lot of the other superheroes just don't seem to have had, you know?
Yeah, and this is interesting to see. This is what happens to Superman when he doesn't have that kind of childhood.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting angle. It's something that they kind of explored it in a little bit when they did the, you know, the Russian Superman, Red Son.
Yeah, yeah, they did. But I think this is more of kind of a lighter take on that.
Yeah, because that was quite stern. Very Vladimir Putin.
Which, I mean, it was set in communist Russia, so
yeah.
What do you expect?
True. So, recommend from you the Superman.
That talk about the subversion thing.
All right.
I think of like probably one of my favourite bits.
Oh.
Is that basically when Kong is trying to tell his dad that, you know, he was the big hero that saved the day by stopping Blue Condor. That his father basically tells him, I don't have time for that because what I'm doing is more important. And Strip says that he's doing it in the interests of, like, truth, justice, and freedom, which obviously, like, the 3 big things that Superman stands for.
Yeah, well, the 3 big things he stands for now. It used to be truth, justice, and the American way.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, times have changed.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting idea, having that come from the father who's basically abandoned our Superman.
Wow, that's an interesting angle.
Yeah, especially because it could lead to him, like, resenting those ideals.
Yeah?
So, yeah, I would definitely recommend New Superman.
Cool. I think I'll have to have a read of this. So, my turn again, is it?
Yeah, your turn again.
Okay. I'll keep this one very, very quick because... Get it?
Are you going to talk about The Flash?
Yes, I am. Anyway, right, starting off with just, it's the first 6 or so issues of Flash Rebirth, and it's got interesting, right? And so Barry Allen is going around doing his thing, everything like that, right? The only problem is there's something that's happened in the city. There is a gang called the Black Hole, and they are led by a guy, a Dr. Carver character, who's horribly scarred. Now, Dr. Carver used to work for Star Labs, and they were doing experiments on the Speed Force, and he is obsessed with the Speed Force. He wants to become a speedster. He wants to be like Flash, right? He kind of shows all the hallmarks of the stalker character, and he's running all these experiments, and one of the experiments causes a lightning storm to hit, and it hits Flash's friend, Detective August Hart. Very similar circumstances, and August realises what Flash's identity is after being hit by the lightning and becoming a speedster himself, right?
This is like the exact same thing that happened to Barry Allen.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah, well, he is a detective, so, you know, he's good at putting two and two together and coming up with four. So he realises, and Barry says, okay, we're going to have to train you, and he starts explaining things. And Barry's realising that his calling, he may be better off as a mentor to other people who can run really fast, because he can teach them things that they wouldn't learn otherwise, because there was no one to teach him. And while he's teaching August, he realises...
So he opens up the Barry Allen School for kids who can't run fast good.
Kind of, yes. And I mean that quite literally, because something worse happens. See, the city is hit by a lightning storm, and suddenly you have all those people who were hit by that lightning have become almost as fast as Flash themselves. And some of them don't understand how to control the Force. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them use it for good purposes. Some of them just want their normal life back. Some of them want to use it to rob banks. And so Barry and August, they're having to run around the city fixing things. They go to Star Labs for answers, and they meet Dr. Mina Dawan. She is also a speedster, and her and Barry basically hit it off in a big way. You know, they really like each other. And so they end up becoming a couple, but it's very short-lived, because one of the speedsters has taken it on himself to exact justice. And the way he's going to do that is by absorbing the Speed Force from every other speedster. But that will actually kill every other speedster as well. He calls himself Godspeed, and Barry has to try and find him and stop him after he attacks Star Labs. Star Labs has set up this training camp for people who have been hit by the lightning, and Barry is teaching them, and Mina is one of the people who is helping out. Mina actually meets Wally West. And
this is the younger Wally West.
This is the younger Wally West, not the one who was trapped outside time. This is the younger Wally West, and she actually meets him and helps him understand some of his abilities. And Wally really likes Mina as well, because, you know, she's not secretive. She's not trying to pressure him into anything. She just has been happy to help him. And so when something happens, and when it happens, Wally goes a bit nuts. And Barry also goes a bit nuts. Everyone kind of goes a bit nuts. And the reason Barry goes a bit nuts is because he realizes who Godspeed is. He realizes...
Is his detective friend.
Yep. Godspeed is his detective friend, and he realized it when Godspeed killed a particular guy by dragging him along while he was running really fast, right? And that guy was one of the people who was responsible for hurting or killing somebody in August Hart's relationship circle a while ago. So August Hart took revenge because he could. And he says, I'm Godspeed, and you can't stop me because you're not fast enough. Meanwhile, Dr. Carver and the Black Hole, Dr. Carver is pretty much a shell of his former self, because a little bit earlier, they set off an experiment with the Speed Force, and Dr. Carver absorbed it but couldn't control it.
That is not a good place to be in.
Nope. So he's pretty much burned out, but I reckon that's queuing up something for him maybe later on. But the whole thing with Godspeed, it's interesting, but I'm getting tired of Flash always having to go up against speedsters. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds very like basically both series of the Flash TV show.
Yeah, and the one thing that I liked was, you know, Mina Dawan and Barry Allen ending up in a relationship. Two people who run really fast, right? Two speedsters. They're the only ones who can really understand each other. And she's got enormous respect for Barry, and that eventually turns into, you know, amorous feelings. And Barry has enormous respect for just how smart she is, because she's a doctor at Star Labs, right? And they really respect each other's thoughts and opinions, and naturally that's going to lead to something a bit more than friendship. So, yeah, I liked that aspect, and it would have been nice if they actually kept that angle of it a bit longer, you know?
Yeah, so is Flash not with Iris in this continuity then?
No, he's not with Iris in this continuity. Right. because this is the Rebirth continuity, and in the Rebirth continuity, Flash and Iris aren't together because Wally is a different Wally West, isn't it?
Yeah, just I've never been sure what the Flash's continuity is post New 52.
In this continuity, he's not with Iris. Wally is still Iris's niece, but
he's his niece. He's her niece, is he?
Yeah, Wally is still Iris's nephew, not niece. But
did he get hit with the gender reversing ray?
Yeah, he got hit with the gender swap gun. Wally is still Iris's nephew, and yeah, but it's not the Wally West who was trapped outside time. It's the other Wally West, the African American one.
Kid Flash now.
Yeah, the one who's Kid Flash now. But he's not Kid Flash at the moment, you know, because Iris
leading up to him becoming Kid Flash. Then.
Yeah, the only one who knows that Wally is a speedster is Mina Dewan, the doctor at Star Labs. Not even Barry knows. Iris definitely doesn't know. Sorry, you were saying?
I was just making it because that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, as I said, I was keeping that quick. That's Flash, and I like it. I like it a lot. I like the idea of turning the city into speedsters, and then, you know, Godspeed. Godspeed, I'm not too sold on. I think that it would have been nicer if Godspeed would have been more interesting if Godspeed was something else and wasn't, you know, his detective friend, because that was kind of telegraphed from the beginning, right? Oh no, it's got to be this guy.
Yeah, well, it's always that. Yes, hello, new guy who is my best friend, but has only just been introduced. Now look, a new villain has also appeared at the same time. What a strange coincidence that is.
Yeah, well, it's telegraphed a bit more when you go, oh look, here's a new character who has been wronged by these people and wants to get revenge on them. Look how dark this character is. If he had the opportunity, wouldn't he take revenge? Because none of us are familiar with the Punisher.
Well, or just familiar with the tropes of literally any kind of fiction.
Yep. So, aside from August Hart and the whole Godspeed thing, I think Flash is going down an interesting route. I will wait and see where it ends up, but I think the August Hart bit just needs to be ended quick and just left, you know, to one side and don't come back to anything like that. See, Flash is interesting when he's up against, say, Gorilla Grodd or something like that. Someone who isn't the speedster. Someone who has a different power set to him.
Yeah, because he's already got, like, the Reverse Flash and Professor Zoom.
Yeah, and having someone called Godspeed and stuff like and whoever else, you know.
Yeah, and plus, I think it's the same plot of I'm the Flash, I run fast, but look, oh no, this villain can run faster than me. I hope I can get fast enough to be as fast as he is so I can outfast him.
Yes.
And fast him in the face.
Okay, so yeah, that's Flash. Not much more I can say about it. It's very straightforward.
Okay.
It's a bit of a DC rebirth today, isn't it?
It is. We've had a DC-centric week.
It's odd because normally it's Marvel, but it's nice to have a change with DC every now and then. And
yeah, and I think congrats on DC for finally putting out enough interesting stuff that we can give them like a whole show.
Yeah, but I did mention that I was going to talk about something alternative to Bombshells later on the show, but we'll keep that to one side for next week if anyone's wondering what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Air Force, which I have talked about before on the show, so go and find that. I'll talk about that next week. And another one I'm going to talk about next week is Civil War 2, Gods of War, because that's led to an interesting point as well. But we'll keep those for next week.
And I might talk about Vote Loki and whatever else takes my fancy.
Yes. Well, we've just had a manga delivery, so there may be some manga in the offing as well, but we'll see about that. But anyway, for now, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.